Hi, Angela here. I'm hopping on before this episode to give you a heads up that I did not edit out the swear words in this particular episode. I'm sharing it now so that you can make a decision for yourself about where and how you're listening. In addition to the swear words, we do touch on some sensitive topics. We don't go into detail, but I do want to give you a heads up that sensitive topics regarding trauma are also discussed in this episode. Welcome to Ritual of Practice Podcast. I am your host, Angela Houghton. The intention of this podcast is to inspire your practice. I thought it would be fun to offer stories of how different people integrate practice in their lives. I am so appreciative of the humans that share their experience on this podcast, and to you, listener, for joining us. May you show up for what lights you up. Hi. Today on the show, I have the honor of sitting down and talking with Hallie Faulkner. Hallie lives in Washington, D.C. with her wife and daughter, and she's a yoga therapist. She also offers trauma-informed yoga training to not just yoga teachers, other professionals as well, and has a rich practice of her own. Hallie reached out to me after hearing the Kakao interview that I did with our mutual friend, Kimmy. And so we just met today on the show, and I am so impressed with Hallie's professionalism, intelligence, how articulate she is, and just her vulnerability in sharing her story. So she has so much to offer here on the show today, and I have already signed up for her training. So yeah, I met her through the podcast, and I had been looking for this type of training, and so it was a clear yes after talking with Hallie today. Whether you're interested in trauma-informed yoga training or not, there are so many nuggets in here that I think will be of service. So thank you so much for listening. I'm in the studio today with Hallie Faulkner, and my heart has expanded just in the first minute or two that we've been together. I thought I would start today when I, you know, just thinking about being here with you today, and you're the first person that has reached out to me, which I have to say that in itself, Hallie, was a real honor. I feel in my life like I take a lot of action, like I'm pretty motivated and inspired. And so, yeah, to be able to receive, it felt really nice to be like, ooh, Hallie wants to come on the podcast, and just I felt inspired, and it felt fun to, have it be a different exchange. So thank you for that. And that actually, when I thought about getting started this morning, was where I want to begin. So There's something, you know, whatever it was that drew you to, you know, I imagine, and I don't want to make too many assumptions, but there's a message that there's something that you want to share with a greater audience. So I thought, let's just dive right in and start there. What inspired you to reach out to me to be on the Ritual of Practice podcast?
I love that. That's so rad. I think first, the answer is I don't know, but we can figure it out together. The short answer, I am just so into what you said about like the flow of giving and receiving. So like trigger warning for everyone who's listening or content warning, I am a survivor of sexual assault and abuse, and I never get into the details, but I refer to that pretty often because it's part of my healing journey. So heads up to anyone who, you know, that's a sensitive topic to, and always an invitation to take care of yourself, press pause, take a breath, take a walk, like whatever you need to do, lie on the ground, write in your journal, all the things that help you regulate. So for me, and so many other survivors, receiving can be so challenging and really not in our wheelhouse, because for a whole host of reasons, part of the reason is because like the energy of receiving often happens around the second chakra, which can be so like wounded, right, after experiencing sexual violence. And so a lot of people, not just survivors, but definitely including survivors who have experienced, you know, real trauma and interpersonal violence, like we have to set up this wall, right? An energetic wall in order to protect ourselves. And so like, yeah, that wall is like really helpful and like helps us move through the world feeling safe. And holy shit, does it block a lot of good stuff from coming in? So as a teacher, I've dedicated a lot of my work. Well, as a human, I've dedicated a lot of my life to healing from trauma and sexual trauma and sexual violence. And as a teacher, I've dedicated most of my work to working with women who've experienced sexual trauma and sexual violence. And so it is meaningful to me that you started with this idea of receiving, because it's, for some people, it comes really naturally. And I am certainly not one of those people. And it's, I think, part of my life's work, to be honest, to be able to receive and allow myself to be in the flow. And some days are easier than others. But I think it's a good place to start.
Thank you for sharing that, Hallie. You can see, because we're on Zoom, my emotional response to that. And, you know, for myself, it is multi-layered, and I didn't expect so I am a bit caught off guard, and I have been doing a fair amount of second chakra healing myself, somewhat unexpectedly. It's have energy, but funny. It's not funny, really, but that my resistance to the chakras early in my offering of yoga, I was like, what are these chakras? I noticed a fair amount of resistance. And so I kind of did ignore them for quite a long time in both my study and my teaching, of which are, you know, obviously connected, deeply interwoven.
Yeah.
Forever a student. And I would say, I don't know exactly when it happened, but I definitely feel aware of, in the last couple of years specifically, starting to open up to that more. And I don't know if it was that, and maybe the combination of Carolyn Mace. She wrote this beautiful book about the chakras and the energy in each chakra. And things, I think, just started to open a little bit on my own healing journey. Are you familiar with her?
Mm-mm.
Oh, I love it. So yeah, maybe these are just the reasons to have this conversation. This is why it's so fun to connect with people. I'll share the book. So beautiful, about the chakras and deep healing. So hearing you talk about the second chakra healing, I have been diving into that this past year. And I think hearing you talk about that, thank you for sharing.
Can I ask you, like, if you feel like sharing, like, I noticed, especially when I was talking about the second chakra, like, it was so emotional for you, right? And I know the second chakra is the seat of our emotional bodies, right? And like, and water, right? And like the flow of emotions. But I'm curious if you want to share any of that, like, why does it feel tender?
It feels really vulnerable because I experienced a separation a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I still deeply love, and, you know, I guess kind of the irony of it, or the thing that's been interesting, is through my journey, I actually unearthed a deeper love. And I think that actually is a part of my healing. So my understanding through Carolyn Mace than anything else about the second chakra is the energy of relationships and the energy of money, which both feel like areas of opportunity in my life. And I do think that it goes back to my childhood, and maybe beyond that to, you know, ancestors as well. So you were called to reach out to me for some reason be on the show. So when you reached out, I looked at your Instagram page and I was like, oh, this is also really interesting timing, because the trauma-informed training has come up a lot in my teaching of yoga lately. And I've been looking at different programs. And I was like, oh, I can ask Hallie about that. You shared a little bit in the intro of what perhaps initially sparked your interest in trauma-informed training, trauma-informed yoga. So I guess my next question would really be kind of expanding on that, getting an even better understanding of how that journey unfolded for you.
Yeah. Since we have some time, I'll do the long-ish version. As I mentioned, or as I referred to, I experience sexual assault and abuse throughout my childhood, my earlier years of my childhood up until I was like around 8-ish years old. A lot of my memories are foggy, which is often how traumatic memories go, especially early childhood memories, but that's my best understanding of what happened. And I, thank God, am very resilient by nature. So I like very efficiently put the trauma in a box and put it far, far away and locked it up and lived most of my life coping by dissociating from my body. So feeling like, or not even feeling, just being very detached from my actual body. Happy to talk more about that. Overachieving. So like, which is really common, right? In kids who are abused or live in traumatic households, it's like, I'm going to be perfect on the outside and then no one's going to know like all of the horrible things that are happening to me. And then compartmentalization, like I mentioned. So just putting it away and never talking about it or never talking about my feelings, any of that stuff. So that worked for a long time until I was like in my mid to late 20s. And I kind of had, you know, checked all the boxes. I got these academic degrees and I had a good looking job and all this stuff. And then I was like, fuck, like I'm still just a shell of a human. And so I never really even talked to anyone. I had never talked to anyone about what happened. I never even allowed myself to think about what had happened. But I finally, at that point in my life, I think, to be honest, because I had started developing the foundation of a daily yoga and meditation practice, I was like, I gotta start dealing with what happened to me because it was feeling like it was like infecting me on the inside. And it particularly showed up in my like romantic, quote unquote, romantic relationships were a true nightmare, like in every single way. So once I got this foundation of a daily yoga and meditation practice, and Kundalini has always been like my practice of choice, Kundalini yoga. I was living in Sacramento at the time and I started seeing a EMDR therapist. And my our first or second session, she gave me a test for PTSD, which had never occurred to me that I would have had PTSD. I thought that was for just veterans, to be honest. I mean, I knew it wasn't just veterans, but I kind of thought like that's the context in which I understood PTSD. And of course, I think it's like a 5 or 6 symptom, you know, test. And I had like six out of six. Like it was such a clear moment in my life where I just couldn't believe that I had been living this way without knowing it with this like pretty serious condition. And she also said I had acute anxiety. And I was like, duh. Like, I was like, oh, don't we all have acute anxiety? Like, I just kind of thought this was a normal way of living. So that was over 10 years ago. And that was like really the beginning of my own healing, major kind of healing process. And I really took it seriously and still do. And yoga and meditation, along with therapy and angels and my beautiful wife, have been kind of the foundations of my healing process. I would say after I became trained as a Kundalini yoga teacher, a few years later, I took a actual trauma-informed teacher training with Kira Hagland, who I love dearly. And it was a 2-weekend training. And this was before I knew what I wanted to do with all this training, but I was just so interested in it. And so I took the first weekend of a trauma-informed training and I was so wrecked physically, emotionally, mentally by just learning all this information about trauma that I couldn't go back to the second weekend. And so I took a whole year for me to finally come. The next year she was offering it, I was like, okay, I'm finally ready. And I did the second weekend of the training. And I will never forget that also because it's a helpful reminder to me about pacing. And pacing is a key aspect of trauma-informed yoga and living a trauma-informed life, I think, and interacting with people in a trauma-sensitive way is understanding that we all move at our own pace and we all need to respect the pace at which we move and the pace at which other people move. It's also very anti-capitalist, which is an added side benefit. And after I completed that year-long trauma-informed teacher training, which was supposed to be a 2-week-long trauma-informed teacher training, very soon after that, I had quit my terrible full-time job and I was like, asked the universe, like, okay, what do I actually want to do? And it came back really quick. The message came back really quickly. And it was like, oh, I want to create healing spaces for women who've experienced sexual trauma. And like, that's kind of evolved over the years, but that's also still kind of it. Like, that's what I want to do. I think I've expanded my understanding of my purpose as like holding healing spaces, you know, because of my life experience and all the amazing survivors now that I've worked with. Like, that's my really, you know, what my real heart space is, holding space for survivors. And so in 2017, I started specifically teaching healing yoga workshops for survivors across the country in person. This was before the pandemic. 2019, I founded a nonprofit to provide healing yoga and meditation for specifically for survivors, trauma-informed yoga and meditation. And then in 2021, I actually developed like my own trauma-informed curriculum that teaches both like the foundations of trauma-informed yoga and trauma-informed meditation and just kind of general trauma-sensitive approaches, but also specifically with a lens on supporting survivors and with the theme of what I call race, gender, justice in yoga. So, you know, asking questions about how we live in trauma-sensitive ways, teach, hold space in trauma-sensitive ways that center women, that center survivors, and center women of color. It's, as you mentioned, like always being a teacher and a student, like I feel like I'm constantly learning and fucking up and learning all over again about what it means, right? Yeah. To hold trauma-sensitive spaces, and particularly for me, like how to be anti-racist while in that practice. But that's, you know, it's the work I love in the space I'm in. And then, so I offer one kind of big 40-hour trauma-informed training each year. So in this year, 2024, it's starting this summer in June. Everyone's welcome. And then I also lead smaller kind of one-off trauma-informed trainings. Like I led one at Kripalu Yoga Center in Massachusetts earlier this year. I think it was in January. So it's the work.
Thank you. May I ask a question that is really selfish?
Multiple levels. I'm talking about receiving, right? I'm like so into being selfish. Yeah.
Well, my first inclination, and I felt it even before I met you, I was like, oh, interesting. Like I'm looking at trainings and Allie's reaching out to me and I just am really delighted with synchronicities. So I'm like, okay, I'm signing up for this as long as it works in my schedule.
Good.
My selfish choice number one. And then the other piece, and this is the part that I think I feel a little bit more like sensitive about, because I want to respect what you're telling me, that this is for women. And I'm a mother of a son. And so I think about the young men. And then I also have a dear friend who's a man who's experienced sexual assault. And so I guess I find myself curious. I think that what I'm experiencing as a woman, just so many tools. And I mean, it is time and we need them. And I think that I want to like speak to that and honor that. And I like, we're a culture that's not just women, and how do we support men as well? And I don't know what my calling is in this, because I seem to attract strong, independent women in whatever it is I do. So I guess I just wonder about the men. And yeah, can you speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, let me just say, I don't know the answers, but we can talk about it together. So I told you, in Washington, D.C. And I have a 4-year-old daughter who's Black, biracial, Jewish, and she has two moms. And she's like an amazing, gorgeous little fireball of a human. Brilliant. And this is making me emotional. Like when we do a lot of walking, DC is like a great city for walking. I think DC was actually designed by the same man who designed Paris, like the, you know, urban architect. Like it's a beautiful city to kind of stroll around and discover. And 10 out of 10, this is like nothing new or revelatory, but 10 out of 10 times when we pass a statue, it's a white man. And, you know, she's always asking me like, who's that? Like, what did they do? I'm like, I don't say this, but I'm like, they fucking fought in some war, they sat on some horse, or they told other people to fight in the war, blah, blah, blah. And I'm not like ungrate. Maybe I am ungrateful for what they did, but I'm really pissed off about the fact that neither myself nor my daughter are represented, right? Mostly in mainstream culture. And it is shifting. But I say that to say that, like, I personally am not worried about the men, in that my job on this planet is to hold space for me and my daughter and my family and other women. Like, that's my lane. That's my wheelhouse. That's the place where, like, I can get shit done. And I also know that, like, my nephew, who's 12 years old now, he better fucking learn how to treat women right. Mm-hmm. Like, he better learn it. Like, someone better teach him, and someone better hold that space for him, and someone better teach him how to process his anger and express his anger, and how to be respectful of women and hold space for women. Like, I am desperate for someone to teach him that, and it's certainly not my job, mm-hmm. right? And I know that there are, I've worked with men in my yoga therapy practice who are survivors. We haven't yet had a man join my trauma-informed training, but I was almost thinking of, like, should we offer a man's discount or something? Like, you know, to start getting men into this place. But I'm like, then I had this whole, like, brain explosion where I was like, well, why am I giving the men a discount, like, to this training? Like, they make more money than we do. But I am with you, and I know that there are organizations, and I'm really grateful for them, that are starting to hold space for men to learn how to heal on their own, and to learn how to hold space in a respectful way to women, for women. Actually, one organization I will lift up is a nonprofit that I love. They're called Hidden Water. Maybe we could put them in the show notes, because they've been really helpful to me. So it's incredible what they do. It's an organization that works on the whole, supports people who've experienced sexual violence within the family, and supports people in all roles in the family. And they have these, what they call healing circles. I believe it's based on an indigenous, like, circle healing model, right? Where everyone who comes together who's been part of the harm. So they have circles for people who have been the victim. They have circles for people who have been bystanders. They have circles for people who have perpetuated harm. And it's kind of a beautiful restorative justice model. You know, obviously there are a lot of men involved at all angles of the harm. And they even have people on their board who are men who have been perpetrators, right? Who have now gone through healing processes. So yes, we need men. And I'm grateful that people were holding those spaces for them. And I am clear that it's not my job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Allie. I think hearing you say that, and the way, like, you just, the boundaries that you held around that were very loving, felt really clear and good to receive. And yeah, just thank you for your patience and willingness to answer that question.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, and I'm so excited you're going to come to our training.
Well, I know. So I had a good little giggle in my head as I was reflecting on this. I was like, oh, June, I got to get this episode out soon so that people can hear about it. And that will keep me from sitting back and, you know, waiting to get comfortable to share it. It'll be some inspiration and motivation to get it out there sooner. But it's often in the re-listening, you know, where I really get a reflection of the vulnerability. But yeah, this is already the most vulnerable episode that I have recorded to date. So I just feel, I'm sitting here feeling a lot of gratitude, because what matters more to me than my comfort, a lot more, is being of service. And so
yeah,
what I am practicing getting uncomfortable, or just stepping into that vulnerability, and, you know, speaking of the high achieving perfectionist side of, you know, there's actually a lot of beauty in the unpolished self, the self that's on the journey, the self that doesn't have it all figured out, the self that isn't an expert, that is very much in the depths in this moment. And so I think that yeah, just knowing that I want to be of service and holding that in my heart is also helpful to get out of my own way.
Yeah, I mean, like being a mess, like being able to publicly be a mess is so helpful for other people.
I don't love that word mess, even though it's funny. And I wonder what that is, because I do feel like I'm embracing mess in other areas of my life. So I wonder what that resistance, I guess it still comes back to the perfectionist and wanting some sort of polished version. And so embrace the mess.
Yeah.
I love that you spoke of pacing. And that also makes me think about synchronicities, because that was my theme this last week. Well, really for the last couple weeks for myself, and then just what my offering was embrace the pace. And so hearing you speak to that, yeah, just reflected that back to me. Thank you.
Yeah. I've been teaching trauma-informed yoga and meditation for a while. So I always start, you know, every class and practice saying, like, this is a space where you're invited to move at a pace that, you know, works for you. Choose what feels good for you. If I suggest something, feel free to do it. Feel free to modify it. Feel free to not do it. Feel free to leave the room, right? Move in a way that feels good for you. And like the feedback by far the most often I get, you know, even if I, you know, do a 5-hour workshop and I think we did all these amazing things, right? It's like the feedback by far the most often I get is, you know, people, women, because that's who I'm teaching, is coming and saying, like, the fact that I felt like I could really do anything I wanted and like move how fast or slow I wanted and tune into the movement and the rhythm of my own body was a new experience. And it was so powerful and really healing, right? And I think, like, for as women in particular, we're expected to move at other people's paces, right? Like, whether it's our partner or emails or men or the news cycles or our children or social media, because we are adaptable, we're always expected to adapt, right? And often when we've experienced trauma, we're so out of touch with our own bodies and our own cycles and our own paces that we've never taken the time to, or it's been a long time since we've taken the time to like tune in, like, oh, how slow do I want to move my shoulders? Like, what direction do my hips want to move in, right? Like, little simple questions like that to kind of like reacquaint ourselves with our bodies. And for people who store a lot of trauma in our bodies, even just that reacquainting like has to be done at a mindful pace. Because if we've lived, like, if I've lived most of my life dissociated, I can't just one day say, okay, now I'm ready to start feeling my body again, because it's too overwhelming, right? The sensations are too overwhelming. So even just kind of like titrating the experience of experiencing our bodies is really important.
Mm. I love listening to you talk. I was so immersed in it. I'm curious though, what your practice looks like on a daily basis, like your personal practice. Can you speak to how you care for yourself using these tools on a daily basis?
That's a really good question. There's so many different ways. It's always shifting and changing, right? And I love that you're like, you know, even the title of your podcast is like the word practice is in there. Cause it's, to me, that's like, it's always a practice, right? In like being a partner and being a parent and being a teacher and taking care of myself. Like, it's always the same cycle of like fucking it up and getting something really right and then being confused and reading a book and learning more and then trying it out and messing it up again. So that is all to say my practice has evolved. And I, around the same time, like over 10 years ago when I started processing, you know, the real deep trauma I experienced, that's when I made just a full-bodied, full-souled commitment to a daily morning practice. And I would imagine it's the same for you. Like, sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's shorter, but like at least for X amount of time every morning, I have to sit and connect. And what it looks like and what it feels like and what I do like changes over the years. more nowadays, it's like, what can my body do? Like I have achy joints. But yeah, the morning practice is the one kind of non-negotiable for me.
Mm-hmm. Me too. And I think that responsibilities, you know, as a parent, and specifically woman, like, so coming back to, you know, just the beingness of being a woman. And I can't speak to this in same-sex partnerships, how that gets, how that shakes out. So I would be curious. I am curious. But I've noticed that the responsibilities for myself and other female friends that are in the male-female dynamic, that the childcare often lands on the woman. And so that morning practice is, so all that to say, really awkwardly, coming back to that morning practice, my son is an early riser. And so I think just thinking about the listener and inviting some creativity into it. Considering how we can be hard on ourselves. So I absolutely recognize that the morning practice serves me best, and to have the grace that there have been times in my life and even still where, depending on what's going on, whether it's being up in the night with a child and then sleeping past that time, or whether it's the child waking up and being awake during that time and maybe depending on their age, not being able to, or boundaries. It can be all sorts of things, or not having a partner to hand off the child to, that I would say had to learn or get creative of allowing that, trying to find the space elsewhere. So there was this period where I would, even though I know that the morning practice serves me, that I would just, not just, one of the things I did for a while was I would meditate right before the kids got home from school, or right before the kids got out of school. Like I would just be like, okay, like this is, you know, like it's kind of like now or never for me. It happened first thing in the morning today. And you know, this serves you. And so you're going into this next chapter. And so I think I say that just to kind of have some humor and invite creativity, because I also have friends that aren't morning people per se. And they've asked me, you know, how do I cultivate this regular practice? Like I am not a morning person. And so trying to support folks and honor them in their different rhythms. And I don't have the answers, but I guess it just kind of like inviting, you know, creative solutions for folks out there that are listening, that there isn't just one way to infuse our lives with these practices and have a ritual.
Yeah. I mean, there's infinite ways, right? That's what's so cool about it. And I do talk to a lot of people who are like, oh, like I can't meditate, or like my brain, you know, is like racing or whatever. And like, but then they tell me a few minutes later that they like love to bike through the woods at sunset. I'm like, how is that not meditation? Right. It's like, you know, maybe one way to think about, understand meditation, it's like just getting in the flow, or like connecting with a certain kind of flow. And like, some people do that through singing. Some people do it through surfing. Some people do it through yoga. Some people do it through sitting and meditating. But like, I mean, I have ADHD. Like sometimes it's literally impossible for me to just sit and meditate. I'm always chanting. Like when I say I like meditate, that's 9 times out of 10, that's what I'm doing. I'm chanting. Like I'm not just sitting and letting my thoughts race, because usually that doesn't feel good to me either. Sometimes I'm unloading the dishwasher and chanting. Sometimes I'm like driving my daughter to school and playing my Japji while she's in the backseat listening to Peppa Pig on her iPhone. Like if, as parents, we are nothing if not creative. And I always love, like, you know, Sanatam Kaur talks about like unloading the dishwasher and chanting, and Tracy Stanley talks about sweeping her floor and meditating on her breath. Like we're householders, right? Like this is the householder's yoga practice. And some days it feels better than others. Some days it feels like just chaotic and not restful. And that's, I don't know. That's, I understand that as part of the flow, but I get frustrated too sometimes.
Thank you for sharing those examples, Allie. I think that is of great service to the listener. Thank you. just to start to expand what is possible. Because it's just helpful to have these conversations so that these ideas can drop in. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Has there been a period where you lost interest in your practices, where it was hard to show up?
It's a good question. I would at first say, since I started like working on my own healing, I would say no, because for my own mental health, like my family and my ancestry has pretty serious mental health challenges. And so for me, like, you know, the fact that I had PTSD, like, and the fact that I have, you know, experienced so much trauma and I have so much like mental health challenges in my lineage, to me, yoga and meditation, it's not like, this is like fun or it's something I should do, like getting on the Peloton, which by the way, I love getting on the Peloton like that. Talk about meditation. It's like an indispensable part of my like mental health care, like caring for my own mental health and like my own like safety and security. So no, not recently, but it's funny. I was just, so Mercury just started retrograde and I'm like, all of a sudden my mind is like 20 years ago. I had this horrible boyfriend. I remember when I was in high school and I was in high school when I first started getting into yoga and meditation. My mom actually showed me like a Kundalini yoga video. And so I started meditating. I think I was doing like 10 minutes a day or something at that point. And this was like sitting in silence. And, I had this really mean and controlling boyfriend when I was in high school. And he was like, every time after you meditate, like you don't really smile as much anymore, which was like so gaslighting and like mean. And also like, it's not my fucking job to smile for you. Right. But I didn't stop necessarily, but I'm okay. This is like over 20 years later. So it has stuck in my mind. So I definitely like dabbled and I tried different things throughout the years. But I think once I really, you know, understood my own like mental health, that's when it became indispensable for me.
Mm-hmm. Did your mom, was she representing a regular practice or was it exploring, period?
My mom she was just here visiting me. She's such a sweet, like, wanderer kind of. She was very much like a hippie, you know, in the 60s and 70s, and still, you know, a hippie at heart. Like, she was a midwife for many years, and she's gone, you know, to visit teachers around the world. And she I was raised Jewish, but she like converted to Hinduism at one point because she really fell in love with religion and the practices. And she still has a daily meditation practice now. I don't quite understand what she does, but it's some kind of pretty complex, actually like chakra-based meditation that she does. So I definitely get some of my, you know, that curiosity from her.
It's really fun to hear the evolution of people's practices and how, I guess that leads me to another question. So she introduced it to you in high school. And then was there a period of time where you weren't exploring that at all? And then what brought you back to it? Or I guess I don't want to make assumptions. Sometimes I'm listening to the story and trying to reflect it back, but also there's a deeper curiosity. Was there a period of time where it wasn't a part of your life?
Yeah, it's so funny that you asked that. I think now, I've never really thought about it, but now that I'm thinking about it, I think when unfortunately, I stayed with that bad boyfriend for a long time. And I think that was like a period where I was like really like separated from myself and just trying to kind of survive and, you know, really dissociated as I'm thinking about it. And I think like that was a period where my walls were pretty high. So, you know, a practice of connecting myself wasn't really compatible with that. And then I think once we finally broke up, that's when I started coming back and like coming back to myself a little bit and exploring more. Yeah. My sister, maybe 20 years ago, 15 years ago, my older sister took me to a Jiva Mukti studio in New York City. I don't know if you ever tried that practice, but that was like, I think part of what started me coming back again was like, you know, that feeling when you take a really good class and like your just whole body feels good. And like, you just, you're like, yes. Like, and I remember having that feeling again. And it was like, you know, for someone who's, who spends a lot of time dissociated, just being able to have that, that feeling again of actually being present in my body and feeling good in my body. I was like, oh yeah, this, this thing.
I know that feeling, Allie. Ooh, is your sister older or younger?
My older sister, yeah, God bless her. She has three kiddos now.
Does she live in New York?
Shout out to Steph. She was a New Yorker in Manhattan for a long time. And then when her and her husband had kids, they moved to back to upstate New York, where I'm from, the suburbs.
Nice. So as far as teaching yoga, this journey of then turning to offer, you know, this practice that was serving you to others, to kind of accessing my, so the question that I have these standard questions, and I'm noticing that I veer from them pretty quickly as the conversation gets intimate. Yeah. And so, you know, I already know that you're sharing your practice with others, which is one of my questions. So I think the deeper piece is what brought you to wanting to share with others?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was definitely like raised with the idea of service and just kind of an, I think, expectation or an understanding that like part of being a human is giving back. And that's looked a lot of different ways throughout my life. But I think it took about 4 or 5 years of me being like deep into my own healing process, especially through EMDR therapy. And then oftentimes with trauma, that's called like the emergency phase, and it can last, you know, a month or a year or a couple of years, but it's that, you know, the period that feels, it feels different for different people, but dark and heavy or overwhelming or just kind of, you know, surviving day to day. That's what it felt like for me. Lots of pretty serious highs and lows of my own like kind of mood. And once I got through that emergency phase and started being able to like see color and experience joy and feel comfortable in my body and wake up in the morning most days and feel pretty good and steady, I just, it was so clear to me. I was like, okay, like I've amassed so many tools, right, for healing, and I just want to start sharing. Like that was it. It was very clear. And that's, you know, first I started doing it through workshops, and now I'm doing it through trainings. And my friend Kimmy and I are having a healing retreat for women coming up in Ecuador later this year.
I was curious about the connection. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's invited.
Is that on your website? I would imagine
it is. Okay. Yeah. So it's in October 2024. We're going to have 4 nights on the beach in Ecuador at this beautiful, sustainable hotel. And we're going deep into it. Kimmy's going to lead us in some cacao work and visiting her family farm. We're going to do a lot of Kundalini work and deep meditation, and then also some envisioning our future together. So it'll be a dope experience for anyone who wants to come. Lots more info on the website, and we've made it like super affordable thanks to Kimmy, because she has all the local connections. So and then I also have my own like yoga therapy practice where I work with people one-on-one and kind of can, you know, do more personalized and intensive work. So and I'm still learning, right, how to share the tools and how to incorporate the tools in my own life. And I like how that, you know, being a teacher and a student has been a theme of this podcast. I think that's really cool.
I have a question about, and this is again kind of coming from my own curiosity for my journey, this you said a yoga therapy practice. Did you have to go to school to get some sort of certification to do that?
Yes and no. So I have my master's degree in education, so I've been able to kind of use that as my like official degree. I started doing a formal yoga therapy training, but it quickly realized that it actually isn't at all like what I do with people when I work one-on-one. Like, my work is kind of very spiritual and energetic in nature. Yeah. And so I dropped out of that program. I do have a couple mentors, though, who are like more traditional therapists, who have been like really critical on my own journey, as well as my teacher, Krishna Kaur. I always have to give her a shout out. Her 85th birthday is coming up in May. So I'm going to go visit her in Los Angeles. But she always kind of, she's a Taurus as well, actually. She's a Taurus sun sign and a Taurus rising. And she always sets me straight. So I have good teachers on the path and not necessarily a formal certification.
So beautifully shared. Thank you for being open to sharing that, because I've had this sense. So I have a dear friend of mine that asked me, I guess it's sometime in the last year. She's like, I have this vision and I want you to do this with me. And I remember being like, holy shit, like this, I was so lit up by what she was inviting me to join her in. And it was a big yes. And then I had the piece of the fear of like, I am not qualified to do this. Like, why is she asking me? And then it's been interesting. So we've been doing this and we had so much fun creating. So she is studying to be a therapist. And so she is like experiencing and looking at things through this lens and very much wanting to offer that in our yoga offerings, which has been super fun. And I am slowly stepping into it. But on that, I've done just a really brief trauma-informed training, but I've done a lot of my own excavation and therapy. And so, just kind of observing myself, I looked into this program that was very expensive. And I wonder if it's the same program that you're referring to, because I started to hear some, not a lot, but just a little bit of judgments around our community, around certifications. And I was like curious of how I wanted to show up and what was important to me and what was, you know, honoring myself and others in this. And so I looked in and it was a big no. It was so clear, Allie. Yeah. I looked at that and hearing you just in this very moment in your clarity, you're like, the spiritual piece is so important. It's so important to me. And it's so important to this person that I'm co-creating with. Her name, I'll shout out to her, Trista Winder. She's such a beautiful human.
Hi, Trista.
Hi, Trista. I'm going to love hearing this when she listens to this someday. That spiritual piece is a place where we really reflect to one another, that connection and that exploration. So hearing you speak to that and kind of this allowing of there's again more than one way to connect to and to be creative in.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it. What was helpful for me is thinking about it from the student's perspective or like the client's perspective, because I have a woman I work with who's a shamanic healer. Every couple of months, when I'm in a crisis, I call on her, and her name's Denise. Shout out Denise. It's like running a spiritual marathon with her. Like, we have a 2-hour Zoom session, and by the end, I'm just like a different person, it feels like. And like, I don't give a shit what degree she has. Like, I don't care where she trained. I don't care who she trained with. Like, all I care is how I feel at the end of it and what I get out of it. So, you know, our brains, I think, are very good at like saying no to the yes. But I like that yes that you felt. That was a good solid yes.
It was such a clear yes when she asked me to co-create with her. And I was like, this feels huge. And I don't understand why you're reaching out to me, why I feel so called to. And so coming back to receiving, you know, like, because again, the one who's like, I feel like often doing the creating and driving, always driving. And so to be like, she's like, I want to do this and I want to do this with you. And I was like, whoa. And it wasn't just the being asked that was the yes. It was what she wanted to create.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, I definitely, when I looked at this other training more recently, I have to look at what it's, but I think it's not trauma informed. It's like it has a different letter or word after trauma. That is what I think is cool about it. And is my understanding is that, because I asked Trista about it, since she's studying to be a therapist, and she said that the way that they offer it is really contained and specific so that they can measure results. And I have a friend who's a scientist, and so she'll also like appreciate this. Like sometimes I sent her this book that I love so much about energy and horsemanship, and she's like, I don't like it. She's like, it's not, there's no science, because they used science in the title. And really, and the woman is, she has a PhD, but it's not peer reviewed. And so for folks who are on that academic path and that measurement tool, I think I just, so when I looked at that training, I was like, am I resisting this in some fashion? And I need to actually step through that. Like the resistance is, but it doesn't feel like that. It feels like my path is different.
Yeah.
More just the alignment that I feel in talking with you about it. Just, it feels really clear. Thank you.
Yeah. It feels good to me too.
Yeah. So there's, again, more than one way, and in honoring.
Yeah. I mean, thank God for the scientists.
Yes. Yeah.
They make medicine for me. So I appreciate them.
Yeah. And that, in honoring other people's paths. So like, if, you know, like if that can be very much a yes for someone else. And
yeah. Yeah.
Path in a different journey.
Yeah. I had a fever. A few weeks ago, I had an eye infection and I had a 104.3 fever. It was like a wild, like 1800s type of sickness. And so I took this like mega ibuprofen. Thank God for that, that broke my fever.
For that. Yes. Yes. Well, I could just keep talking to you forever. And I have one question here today, this morning, that I want to ask here to finish our conversation. And that is, what are you currently reading?
Oh my God, that's such a good question. Well, this is like a little bit of a loaded question.
I love it.
Okay. So I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I'm reading Yoke by Jessamyn Stanley. Highly recommend. She's an incredible queer yoga teacher.
That's a memoir. I'm familiar with her. Is that a memoir that she wrote or something different?
It's like a collection of essays.
Okay.
She has two. It's her second book. It's her first book I've ever read by her. And it's so good that I, like you said at the beginning, I have to read it little by little and just ingest it. But it's really helping me as a teacher, which is great, and humbling me as a teacher. And I always have a New York Magazine on my bedstand and the New Yorker on my bedstand, because I'm a New Yorker at heart. And I think those are very cool. And I was just reading, the good book I just finished was a really good queer romance, very cheesy. Oh my gosh, what was that book called? I don't remember what that book was called. This is my 40-year-old ADHD brain. I was reading another book, but it was too triggering. That's why I said it's a loaded question, because sometimes I like start books and I've had this experience twice. I've started books and they're so good, and then there's like no content warning and something that just like throws me totally off and I can't read the book again, which is just so shitty. So if anyone out there is willing to start a website with like content warnings for books, I would really appreciate it. I think that would be a good service to me and others.
Wow, what a beautiful reflection. Yeah. So we'll put that queer romance in the show notes so that, you know.
Okay.
We'll have it there as a resource. You can look back afterwards. And maybe someone will be inspired. So definitely reach out to us.
Please do. You will be doing a service to humanity.
I'm delighted by how many people are reading. So I shared this recently on the podcast. I think it may have been with Kimmy, just about this, some science again behind folks not reading. And what I'm learning is how many people are reading. So thank you for sharing with us, with me and the listeners.
I love that question. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for sharing. And thank you, Allie, so much for being on the podcast today. I am super grateful that you took the time to spend with me this morning and to share so authentically with me and with the listener. And I am genuinely interested in your training. I have been looking for this kind of thing, because what Trista and I are offering and what seems to be an do not know where it's going. I mean, I have little ideas, but it seems like we're stepping more and more in this direction of wanting to support people in using a yoga and meditation practice to begin to explore, you know, trauma in their lives and addiction and these things. And it feels really big to say that, but it's also true. So I think that I've been a little shy about how Trista's not shy about it because, you know, she's actually studying to be a therapist as well. But I've been a little shy about like sharing that. And so looking for some support on my journey, like how do I continue to educate myself so that I can be of service in the best way possible?
Yeah, I think that everyone who is interested in doing trauma-informed work is called to it for a reason. And I think if there's something calling you to holding that kind of space, my unsolicited advice would be to lean into it because you are a healer and there are lots and lots and lots of people who are desperate for healing. And even if you don't know all the exact tools or have all the exact tools, like the tools are there and the tools are learnable. And the thing that's really not learnable is like your spirit and your intuition and your heart. And you have that stuff. So it's really just a matter of like finding a way to get the tools that you're wanting. Like you have everything that you need and it will serve a lot of people for you to start holding those kind of spaces.
Oh, thank you, Allie. I feel like for both of us, there were some, there's a reason that we were to connect today. And
yeah,
I'm just really appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll do it again. Have a gorgeous rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Wow. I am so grateful that I followed my intuition to say yes to Hallie and get her scheduled for a conversation on the Ritual of Practice podcast. I have a lot of takeaways from our conversation today. And the biggest one is, which you already know, I've signed up for her training. I'm really looking forward to spending more time with Hallie and learning from her. I was really impressed, you know, sharing the space with her. And I just could feel that this is someone that I want to spend more time with. And that is actually a big part of my takeaway as well, is the grace in which Hallie shared her story. And, you know, I feel that it could be a guide, you know, for others in how to walk through healing trauma. So other takeaways about practice. I loved that she shared that her practice is always shifting and changing. That just speaks to the nature of practice itself. And then that there are infinite ways to infuse our lives with the ritual of practice. And her emphasis on going at our own pace, that I think is so important and often overlooked, to honor our own pace and honor the pace of others. So thanks for being here on the show with us. I appreciate you listening. Thank you for tuning in to the Ritual of Practice podcast. You can find the show home at ritualofpractice.com. Follow us on your favorite listening platform to receive weekly inspiration for your practices. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone you love. Until next time, keep practicing.